You are listening to the Horse Radio Network, part of the Equine Network family.
What a beautiful day for horses in the morning.
You are listening to the number one horse podcast in the world. Here's your entertaining look at the horse world and the people in it.
I am Coach Jen from Ocala, Florida.
And I'm Mary Kitzmiller from Kemp, Texas. And you are listening to Horses in the Morning on the Horse Radio Network for February 6th, episode 3621. Today's show is brought to you by Chewy. Good morning, Horse World.
What is your favorite day of the week?
You never stop learning. You never stop understanding. It's more in depth than just riding a horse. Knowing that for the rest of my life, I could work on this and I'll never stop learning.
Welcome back, Mary, for the uninitiated. Mary is here for the first Thursday of every month, and we sit down and geek out about all things horse training. And ding, 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 we will have an auditor post show today, so stay tuned, auditors. How you been, Mary?
Pretty good, pretty good. It's already getting really hot here in Texas. We didn't get much of a winter, but I'm sure we'll get another cold snap.
The part of Texas you're in, do you guys generally have a proper winter, or is winter pretty much, it gets chilly for 4 weeks and then you're done?
Most of the time it's that. It's even though the temperature, like 30s and 20s here, is rare, but because we're very humid, I'm in East Texas and it's very humid. It's like that wet, dank cold that kind of gets into your bones. Mm-hmm. And then every 3 or 4 years we'll have a freak snow or ice storm. And then Texas acts like it's never seen snow or ice ever. Yeah. And I get it, because people from, you know, snowy states will be like, why don't you guys have snow plows? I'm like, we would only need them a couple times a decade. Like, why would we have them?
Yeah. Yeah. It's easier. It's more efficient to just shut down for 3 days and you're done. Yeah.
Yes. Plus, you know, I see people from like Montana and stuff bragging on, we can drive in ice and Texas shuts down if there's a quarter inch of sleet. And I'm like, yes, that's very true. And I myself would not drive in Texas if it was that way, because Texas drivers are horrible. Not so much in the country, but the city guys, especially Dallas, people think that, oh, my car has four-wheel drive, so I can just drive like a maniac. I'm like, no. That's just to keep you from getting stuck. Yeah. This doesn't make your car invincible. And so I've driven in Montana where it was snow and then solid ice under that. I felt so safe because everyone's like, yep, we just go slower and everyone knew what to do and no problem. But I wouldn't go out in Texas in that weather. People now, Tokyo drifting all over the place.
Tokyo drifting. As far as your many, many horses, the number of which we will not disclose, do you have any of them that are hothouse flowers that you have to pamper when it gets those sudden cold snaps that you get every once in a blue moon?
Not really. No, they're all pretty hardy guys. They all get good winter coats. Remy, oddly enough, does not like to get wet, even though he grew up in the wilds of Wyoming. And he's probably used to some snow drifts. So he likes to be warm and cozy inside. But yeah, they're pretty good. The big thing I just make sure is when it gets cold, they have plenty of forage. That's the number one thing.
Now, forage in your part, because different parts of the country have different traditions as far as how they feed forage. Do you have a propensity to be feeding forage in individual servings, or do you tend to put big pasture bales out?
I do big pasture bales out for my pasture group. And then I've got a few horses that go out to pasture during the day, but then they go into stalls at night. And so they will get hay morning and night, but then they get to go out and nibble on what's ever on pasture.
Very interesting stuff. Well, along about this time in each month's show, we get to clue into Mary's training tip. And the training tip is always interesting, and it's always spawned by some interesting event in your life. So what is it this time around?
So I want to talk about one of my favorite subjects, which is groundwork. So I love groundwork. No secret there. And I misunderstood groundwork for many, many years. I'm pretty sure I've talked on the show about this before. There was a time in my life where I thought groundwork means if you do anything I don't like, I'm going to run you around in some circles and get you good and tired and sweaty. And it took a lot of effort. And, you know, I really thought I was doing something because I'm like, man, we worked really hard there and now you're being better. And I would hear other clinicians and cowboys and trainers say things like, well, you've got to get to their feet. You've got to control the feet. And a lot of people say that. You got to get foot control, body control. If you control the feet, you control the mind. And again, I just never got it. I just thought, well, yeah, I know all these exercises to make the horse go sideways and backwards and forwards and move the shoulders and move the hips and all that. And I just thought you just drilled on all of those and then you had groundwork. And I mean, I got good results with it. My horses were very educated and knew how to do a lot of stuff. But I found that a lot of my horses were a little bit on the hotter side. And I was like, dang, I'm just training all these hot, anxious horses. I don't know why all my horses are hot and anxious. And I wasn't looking at the common denominator, which was me. So once I figured out what foot control really means, it changed how I do groundwork. Do I still lunge my horses? Do they still work hard from time to time and work up a sweat? Yeah, absolutely. But I do groundwork with the intent to get perfect and refined control of that horse's feet. And when you talk about getting to the feet to control the mind, when I can move those horses' feet as if they were my own. And I'm not talking about big, huge maneuvers. You know, I can look at one, you know, their left front foot and they can pick it up and put it down with very little cue. It creates this calmness over the horse. And I think that happens for several reasons. I think it happens because you're giving the horse something to focus on. You're giving them a job. And it gives the horse a lot of clarity. So in times when they're very confused or anxious, not sure what's going on, they know they can look to their person for help. Most of the time when I see anxious horses, you know, when they come to clinics or go to shows or whatever, it's the horse that needs help and they're looking for help everywhere but their person. So maybe they're thinking, oh, if I just can go back to the barn or go back to the stall or go to my friend on the other side of the arena, I'll be okay. And so you see these really anxious horses that are really, you know, busy with their feet and they're screaming across the arena for their buddy, but they're not looking at their person. And so all my groundwork is built around, if you're ever confused, look at me, I will give you help. And how I create that, there's a lot of different methods, but you want to make being with you and focusing on you and you guys have your focus on each other, the safe place for your horse. So you can do that with positive reinforcement. You can do that with pressure and release of pressure, but you want to make being with you easy and you want to make it the first answer that comes to the horse's mind if they're ever upset. I can't make my horse not afraid 100% of the time. I can't keep his feet perfectly still 100% of the time. I mean, it's my goal to get 100% control of the feet, but I'll never get there because it's a living, breathing animal with his own thoughts. But I can teach the horse, if you ever need help, I'm here. And if my horse is looking at me and focusing on me, that means they're not bucking, they're not running off, they're not running over me. And they're not prancing around. And so one of the ways that I do that and what kind of inspired today's tip, I was playing with a little three-year-old horse that I had, that I've had in training, who is doing really good. I started him. He's really good little guy, but he gets kind of anxious sometimes and gets a little busy with his feet. And like when I'm saddling him, he kind of moves over a step and I sort of let it go for a little while. And then I'm like, no, okay, you need to stop doing that because this is going to go into a bigger problem.
Yeah,
so
it'll escalate. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. You want to nip that in the bud. And so I did like my regular groundwork session with him, his first week back in training of, you know, okay, let's work on the things we're working on. And then I did sessions with him where I'm like, you know what? I wonder if I could get you saddled in the middle of the arena completely at liberty. And So I'm like, what kind of control do I need to have? What kind of refinement do I need to have to get you to understand to stand completely still and I go get my saddle and saddle you? And that's what I played with. And it showed me the holes that I had and I worked on it and it was great. And then I thought, okay, I wonder if I could get you to come meet me on the mounting block at Liberty. Like what kind of body language and cues do I need to do that? So that's what I did. And I wasn't using any particular method. I was just, you know, just kind of using some of the tools that he already knew and just seeing what I could get done. And then I thought, okay, I wonder if you'll stand still enough for me to hop on you. And then, you know, I just rode him tackless around the arena. And it was all just based on what would it take to get you to understand what I'm asking you. And I think I myself don't do enough sessions like that where I really like get both my curiosity and the horse's curiosity piqued and say, okay, what can we accomplish together? How can we get this done? So when you're doing groundwork, you know, there's a lot of tried and true methods out there, a lot of things you can drill and repeat and teach and hone and all that. But I think it's really important to understand the core of why you're doing it, which is to build a connection with your horse and to start getting a little more brave and curious and experimental and saying, you know, I wonder if I could get my horse to step up on this pedestal with just a gesture. I wonder if I can get my horse to pick up his right back foot and place it back one step. And then maybe I can get him now to place it forward one step. And doing that with your horse, it starts to create this like almost woo-woo connection to where they start really almost reading your mind. And when you get into that zone with the horse where you guys are just working as one unit, all the things that are scary that can happen when we're riding and working on the ground, like bolting, bucking, running, spooking, all that fun and stuff, those tend not to happen because we're on the same page. So when you're doing your groundwork, no matter what stage you're in, just kind of have that in mind. Just start thinking about what's the most I can get this horse to do with doing as little as possible. And don't be afraid to make mistakes and reward the horse when he's doing good and, you know, try again when he doesn't do it quite right. And I really encourage you to go out there and just experiment and play with your horse.
That's very interesting stuff. Because the thing that stuck out to me there was it helped to illuminate holes in a horse's training, because there are always holes, no matter how hard we try. There's always something that we have to and should backtrack on. Oh, we need to go back and revisit the prerequisite to this current problem I'm having. By going and doing some really interesting groundwork whose goal was to create a new skill versus groundwork that is designed to, quote, fix a problem. They're two different mindsets. And I think from the point of view of the horse, they're two different experiences that happens. I see, and I don't do enough groundwork either, because at first it's like, oh, this is kind of fun, but now I want to get on and go fast, please.
Yeah. And I used to think that groundwork was, you know, I worked in a program where we had like 117 groundwork exercises, and we had groundwork exercise stage one, and it was very regimented. And that's very good because it can help you when you don't know how to do groundwork, and it gives you something to do when you don't know what to do. But after I would finish all those exercises or halfway through, I'm like, I'm bored. I want to ride. And now
yep, <that's me.
laughs> when I do groundwork, it's like watching paint dry, because I love just dinking around with the horse. There are times when you really want to be clear and regimented and we're going to make this cue very understandable and the horse will do this and we will release at this point. But I think, especially with this little three-year-old, the three-year-old knows quite a bit already. You know, I'm riding him. He's doing good. He's a good boy. But when I started to notice that he's doing the things I want, but he's just kind of a little bit nervous and antsy about it, I noticed a huge difference when I'm like, I was done with our quote unquote regular session. Like I wanted to get him out, work on walk, trot, canter, blah, blah, blah. Let's get those hindquarters over. Let's get the shoulders. And then at the end, that's when I took all the gear off of him. And I'm like, okay, let's just dink around. And I had no worries at all about climbing on him without any tack and just riding him around, because we did it in such a way that it's like real low energy. And I let down my kind of, you know, I can be tense and anxious when I work horses, especially young horses. But when I did it from kind of more of, hey, let's see what we can get done, it changed his mindset too. And he just stood on the mounting block as long as he wanted. And then I hopped on him and I rubbed him all over and pet him and then gave him a little leg and just walked him off. And he's like, yeah. And we just kind of wandered around the arena. You know, we didn't really have a whole lot of steering or anything. We had go and we had stop.
Those are two important ones.
Those are some good ones. But I think that it was a great ending because it just made him go, okay, it's not always this big, scary thing we got to do every day of just rote repetition. So there's all sorts of different things to explore within groundwork where you bring their energy up. And then there are times when you just want to keep it low energy and fun.
See, that's one I need to pick your brain about at some point, is how to help a horse control that energy. Because new horse baby James, who's just not quite four yet, had some good groundwork done. He had a good start, but there are holes. And one of the holes is whenever he is in a round pen or lunge line situation. I don't think he was lunge much. I think it was pretty much just a round pen. His energy goes instantly up because he was started in that school of the round pen is mostly used just to burn off excess baby energy, not a whole lot else. So I'm struggling a bit helping him understand that this is supposed to be a learning experience, not just blowing off steam.
And the perfect exercise for that, actually.
Yeah. So I'll have to pick your brain on one of the future episodes on working on that. But speaking of holes in your life, if shopping online is a hole in your life and you haven't found a great place to shop online, and there are lots of places, but they're not all good. Chewy is your one-stop shop. From feed and supplements into supplies and medications and more, they are delivered straight to your door, even your barn door, with fast, free shipping on orders over $49 and the convenience of auto ship. I love that. You'll never have to worry about running out of the brands you trust and the products you need. You can count on Chewy to keep your barn stocked and your horses happy. Start shopping today at chewy.com/equine. You can just put chewy.com in there and you're also going to find the place. For the longest time, I got Scooter's horse feed from Chewy because they carry Daily Dose Equine Horse Feed, which sponsor the horse health tip over on Wednesday shows. And it was so nice. I didn't have to go an hour and a half down the road to the fancy feed store that had the feed. It just showed up at my door right on time. Every time. Yay.
Nice. I use Chewy for my dogs, especially my dog Echo, who's on lots of special diets and supplements. And yeah, the auto ship is really good if you're like me and you have ADHD and you're like, did I order that supplement that the horse has to have every day? Yeah. I can't remember.
And their auto ship interface is quite efficient. I've used AutoShip with other online companies for other things, and the interface can be tricky and things don't show up on time or they get canceled accidentally and stuff like that. Theirs was pretty darn good. So I would recommend it. Chewy.com/equine. Check them out today. And now it's time for our first question. Every month, Mary posts over on the Horse Radio Network auditors page to the auditors to submit training questions. And if you would like to be able to do that, you need to be an auditor. And in order to become an auditor, you need to go to horseradionetwork.com. And then you click on shows and then you click on horses in the morning. And on that page, you're going to find a become an auditor. And what happens is you toss in a couple of bucks every month to become an auditor and you get to have fun things like submitting questions to the training and health segments on horses in the morning. So what's our first question and who's it from?
It is from Elizabeth Sinclair, and she writes, I am trying to get my 20-year-old leased mare to lower her head in trot. She has lovely, relaxed swinging walk, but as soon as she trots, heads up in the air and she pulls. I think she was ridden in Western style bit in the past, but I'm using a French leg snaffle. I've tried trotting on a loose rein, so nothing for her to pull against, but we just go faster with the head in the air. So this is one of my favorite things to tackle with horse training, because for years I worked in an industry where that's kind of the style. We bred in the reining, we bred our horses one to kind of have this like level, almost downhill top line. And they really like the look of a horse that's kind of got their head down and they really geared into those circles. And so I was obsessed with getting my horses to look like that for years. And the thing that I learned about getting the head down is the issue is rarely about the head. So we tend to think, oh, I need to get this horse's head down. So I'm going to try this or that bit and that's going to do it. Or I'm going to put this style martingale or this kind of tie down or this, you know, some sort of tool on the horse's face to try to encourage them to lower their head. Or we'll ride with our hands a certain way and try to take up contact in a certain way to try to get that head down. And yeah, there's a little bit of that. You do want to get them soft in your hands and all of that. But I found that the whatever their head and neck are doing in the ride is actually not the problem. It's a symptom of what's going on in the rest of the horse. So there's a million different reasons why a horse could be going around with its head in the air. But typically they fall into two categories. It's either something's going on with the horse's mind, or something's going on with the horse's body. And even, I want to say, you know, even higher headed horses can ride around with their nose on the ground. If you want to teach long and low, I've done it with Frisians and every horse can do it. So, you know, but I don't punish them for putting their head in their natural, you know, how they naturally do it either. So anyway, so the issues usually fall in the horse's mind or the horse's body. When we're talking about the horse's body, obviously it could be some sort of health issue. He's out here. He needs to have body work. He needs to get adjusted. Maybe he needs his teeth done, yada, yada, yada. So it goes without saying you want to eliminate anything like that that's going on. Otherwise, typically I find that the horse with its head in the air that doesn't easily drop its head when I try to encourage them with the bridle or with my legs is a horse that's out of whack somewhere in his body, as in he needs to be worked on laterally. So for instance, I've had horses that really wanted to bulge their left shoulder as they're going around, you know, as I'm riding them around in circles, that, you know, they just really drop that left shoulder and kind of got this counter bend to the right as I'm going to the left. Well, if that horse is out of balance like that, their head naturally comes up. It's very hard to get their head down because they're so out of whack. So instead of trying to use two hands and get the horse's head down, I focus on that body part that's out of whack. And sometimes it's the shoulder that's going off one way. Sometimes they want to cant their hip in one way or the other. So in those cases, I do, you know, dressage is the perfect cure for all of that because it's a lot of lateral work and body control. So I do things usually with a horse like that with one rein. I've usually focus on one rein on one side. So you can work on soft inside bend. You can work on leg yielding. You can work on haunches in, all of that kind of stuff, and get to where I can put that horse's body where it needs to be. So if I ride around and I feel that left shoulder bulging out, I can pick up that shoulder and get it straight again. Once you get to where I can put that body to right again, I can get that horse on that circle or on that straight line, the head almost 100% of the time naturally softens and lowers. From there, then I can just encourage really lightly with my hands to put their head or face exactly where I want it. But if I'm finding that I'm having to pull and fight my horse, that means something's out of whack. So that's one thing. That's one of the body problems I encounter a lot of times. The other thing that I notice that horses have difficulty with getting their head down is horses that have really choppy, irregulated gaits. So if a horse, you know, walks pretty well, but then they go into the trot and it's really choppy, I'm not going to work on their face at all. I'm going to say, let's work on that trot. Let's see if we can get that trot to go forward and fluid, not nervous energy, not real choppy energy. And I'm going to work on getting that trot just real smooth to where I can make that trot as slow or as fast as I want. When I get the gaits regulated and I get my forward button working way better, then whatever natural ability the horse has to lower their head usually occurs. And then again, from there, then I just barely need to use my hands to do anything else with the horse. So those are some example of body issues. You know, the horse needs to work on its gaits. It needs to get better balanced laterally. I do tons of lateral before I ever pick up on two reins at the same time and try to get the horse's head down. So getting a horse straight and collected on the bit to me is almost an advanced maneuver. But when I was learning, that was like the first thing I tried to do because I thought a straight line was the easiest thing in the world. Ask any dressage trainer how easy it is to get your horse on a perfectly. Yeah. I would wager we do all the fancy dressage stuff with the end goal of getting the horse straight. So that's, you know, that's showing you how long it takes to get that balance. So that's kind of how the body issues with that go. Now, one of the context clues I'm reading in Elizabeth's question is when she tries trotting on a loose rein, we go faster with her head in the air. So that tells me, maybe in addition to any kind of body issues we've got going on, that tells me that maybe the issue with this horse is more in her mind, where she feels insecure unless she's got some sort of contact. As soon as you loosen contact, she's like, I've got to run. So when that happens, the instinct, of course, is to hold the horse in frame and just try to like prevent the bad things from happening. And I'm going to make you slow down into this trot. I'm going to make you put your head into this set. But then the horse becomes dependent on it. It becomes like a security blanket for them, or they start running through it. And that's where you start changing bits and let's go to the shank bit and this and that and the other. And you're just putting a Band-Aid on it. It's not really doing anything. So I don't really care about getting my horse's head in a certain position until I can walk, trot, and canter that horse on a loose rein and they don't build the speed. Meaning some horses have a naturally fast canter. So I'm not going to try to force that horse into a Western pleasure canter. All I'm concerned about is if I ask you to canter and I don't pick up on your face, you maintain a, you know, pretty good forward relaxed canter at whatever speed is comfortable for you. If I feel that horse starting to build speed when I don't have a hold of his face, that tells me I have a way bigger problem than whatever's going on in his head. Again, head position is the symptom. So head up in the air, in this case, I'm willing to bet, is I'm nervous. So if the horse is nervous, the more we try to clamp down on it and make that head go down, the more they feel trapped and claustrophobic. So we need to get their mind in the right position. So it sounds like the horse has just this really great walk, but as soon as we go up to the trot, heads up in the air, she pulls and goes faster. So what I would do is without really trying to get any kind of collection on that face, any kind of headset, is lots of upwards and downward transition, walk, trot, walk, trot, walk, trot, walk, trot. And then if the horse, I would walk and trot that horse a million times until when I pick up that trot, that horse is starting to think, oh, we're going to walk again. And when I see,
yes, exactly.
Exactly. When I see a horse, the moment I know I'm making progress is when I ask the nervous horse to trot and they're like, are you sure you want me to keep trotting? Because I could walk. I'm like, okay, now we're getting somewhere. When that starts to happen, when I can get to a trot and it's not immediate takeoff, and I'm like, oh, I think you can hold a couple of strides at this speed. Then I say, okay, now trot 1, 2, 3 strides, walk. And then I'll do 3 strides of trot over and over and over again. And when that feels pretty good, I'll say, okay, now 4 strides, now 10 strides, now 20 strides. And I will work on that until I could ride that horse down to the buckle and they will just trot happily and relaxed all over the arena.
Regardless of where their head is. Just
exactly.
Trotting around the
arena. And what you will see, what I guarantee, if you do this right and you don't grab their face, don't be so quick to grab their face. If you do this right and you get that horse to start letting down and relaxing in that trot, you will see the pole drop all on its own. And from there, I don't hardly ever work on, okay, today's the exercise where we make our horse put its head down. I used to do that. I used to train a lot with the, I want to get your head down. And I work on that for an hour. Now I learned, okay, I need to work on all these other things first. When I get those working well, that horse's head is usually already down in the dirt. I actually have to say, okay, pick up your head a little bit, please. So how I want it to work is that horse has a nice, supple top line. You know, they're just nice and straight and forward and relaxed. If I have the horse in that zone, then it's quite easy for me to put their body where I need to. It takes very, very little rein aid, and I'm not feeling like I have to pull the horse or beg the horse to put its head in a certain position. And this is an older horse, so this can take some time. And as long as you're just slow and patient and relaxed, it should work out for you.
Perfect. And having ridden lots and lots of anxious horses who like to go forward over the years, something that I had to learn to clue into and had to be taught was when I'm doing these kinds of exercises, and you can down the long side of a dressage arena, you can do 5 or 15 transitions. What tended to happen is my aids were too strong, so it actually sharpened the horse and made it more anxious. I needed to tone down my aids so that when I was walking along and I said, you know, we're going to try a trot now and I'm not going to grab your face, I had to use the tiniest little aids to ask for that trot so that the horse sort of drifted into the trot so that I didn't key the horse up, because that was my tendency. Well, I'm practicing transition, so the transition needs to be crisp and proper. No, the transition needs to be relaxed and soft. And that was a real light bulb for me when I was shown that that's what I was doing. I didn't realize I was doing that. And it made this whole process successful, because I tried the process. I'm going, this is just making my horse more anxious and I need to grab his face even more. It's because what I was telling the horse, I was saying trot, and the horse goes, yes, I'm trotting. I need to say, trot, please, when you're comfortable. So when I first started to apply this process, it would take 5 or 6 or 7 strides before the trot would pick up. But when the trot got there, the horse's anxiousness level was down a few ticks, so that when I had to say, okay, we're going to walk now after 4 or 5 steps, because the horse would get quick, it wasn't an anxiousness level of 1 to 10 and then back to 4 again. It was 1 to 6 and back to 4 again. So keep in mind that your aids are going to influence that level. And this might be a completely new experience for this horse. She might have never experienced anything like, oh, just trot and just walk before. So give yourself some time.
And that's a really, really good point. You know, some people have what I call electric seats, because I say, hey, trot your horse, and they go, kick, go. I'm like, no. So yes, maybe in the show pen, that horse has to hit trot at letter A. But we know in the case with this horse that I could get her to trot easily, quickly. So we don't need to work on that, because I can get it if I need it. If I need this horse to like take off to the moon in under a split second, we got it. What I want this horse to do is, like you were saying, take her time. And if it takes you the long side of the arena to get into trot, fine, because we know that's not the problem with this horse. She's not lazy. And so, you know, don't go to the bottom of your leg to ask. First, go to your seat and then work your way down your leg and give the horse a little security hug into that trot. Yeah. Let him take all the strides that they want. Think of it like the first car that I had was I don't even know how many gears I had. It was a 72 Super Beetle, and the transition was a little jacked up. So when I wanted to go from first to third to second to fourth gear, it would, you know, I would have to like really get that gear, and the car would lurch forward into the next gear. And that's how we did it. And we just lurch forward in the first, second gear, third gear, fourth gear. And that's how a lot of us ride our horses. We're like, what? Trot, canter. But eventually I want my horse to ride like a Ferrari with lots of different gears. And I want that. I want it to purr. I want it to just very fluidly, with little change, seamlessly go into second, third, fourth, fifth, sixth gear. And so think about, you know, getting your horse to drive like a high-end sports car, or even a race car, where you've got all those wonderful gears and it goes nice and smooth and your transmission is working just so good. That's a good visual for me.
There we go. Perfect. We're going to take a quick break here and hear from one of our important sponsors. And when we come back, we're going to have a question from Katie.
For first-time horse owners and new riders, finding the information and support you need can be challenging. That's why Equine Network has partnered with Sentinel and Absorbine to bring you My New Horse. From important horsekeeping information and how-to videos to social media communities, exclusive experiences, and more, My New Horse is your one-stop shop for riders of all levels and disciplines looking for easy-to-understand horse care information and guidance. Start your horse ownership journey today. Visit mynewhorse.com.
Okay, we have a question from Katie, and she asks, how do you get a horse to focus on you and settle down during lunging? We are bringing my mare back into shape after having the fall and winter off. When lunging her, she'll get a burst of energy and act like a kite and start bucking, especially if she hears another horse whinnying and then just wants to fly around. We don't want her to get too hot and sweaty since it's so cold, and we also don't want her to overexert and hurt herself. So we got a ton of questions this time around, and I'm definitely going to save a bunch of them for the next show, but a lot of them fall into this category of I need my horse to focus, and either I don't want to lunge the horse and get him all hot and sweaty and hot and bothered, or I don't have enough space to do that with the horse, or the weather is bad and I, you know, it's just not safe to run the horse around. So all of these are going to kind of require the same answer. So I've talked about this on the show before. I love lunging, but to me, I don't lunge simply to get the fresh out or to get my horse tired. Sometimes that happens, and sometimes it is about, okay, you haven't been out of your stall in a week, and let's just let you get the zoomies out. But for the most part, I'm thinking again about foot control. So when I first learned how to lunge a horse, I would just like attach this big old lunge line to the horse, and then I would like back up and, you know, try to wiggle the whip towards their hip and cluck. And then the horse would kind of start going around, and I'd sometimes back around in a circle to get out of their way. And eventually they'd be on the circle, and then we're lunging. So I didn't really have the mastery and control I needed to get that horse to calmly think about what they were doing. And if you have a horse that's been lunged quite a bit, when they've done an exercise over and over and over and over again without any kind of thought to how do I want you to do this, they sort of go on what I call screensaver mode. They just turn off. And so they're just like, oh, it's lunging. I'm going to run around like a maniac. So when I teach a horse to lunge or maybe reteach a horse to lunge, I'm going to be very thoughtful about it. So how I like it to go is I like my horse first to be at a comfortable distance away from me. So again, and I'm trying to put more emphasis on putting their feet where I want them without having to do very much myself. So in order to do that, well, how do I get that horse away from me, especially if he's trying to run me over or he's used to being in my pocket? How do I get him away from me without moving my feet? Well, that's a whole lesson in and of itself. Okay, I need to teach you how to focus on me and back away. So I'll teach that before I teach lunging and say, okay, how can I get you to back away from me without me moving my feet? And I do that using a long, soft rope. So there's a lot of different exercises to do that of, okay, first we need to create some distance, because if my horse runs around like a maniac and they kick out, I will be collateral damage. I still have scars from getting double barreled by a horse that I thought was far enough away and they were not. So, you know, so that distance is number one. Number two, once they're out away from me, that horse needs to wait and they need to keep their focus on me and they need to wait for me to give them a cue. So that in and of itself is a whole slew of groundwork exercises of you need to back away and wait. And then I have to be like, what's the cue? What is going to be start lunging? Whenever you do these, and I learned this from trick trainers, it's important to have a cue that cues into the behavior and a cue that says behavior over. So again, we're talking about bringing clarity to my horse. When we bring that clarity, they tend to calm down naturally. So my horse needs to know when to not lunge and when to lunge. So that's a whole thing. I like to use the cue of I'm going to kind of point the direction I want my horse to go. It's both a visual signal. And also when I point with that lead rope in my hands, it's going to put a little pressure on that halter to direct the horse's nose where I want him to go. Now, again, I like to start this out with the horse facing me. So in order for him to get on that circle and keep his distance from me, he's got to move his shoulder. So that's a whole other thing that I want to work on, is get him to step that shoulder away from me. So there's a million different groundwork exercises you can do from that. Once that horse has now moved his shoulder over, so it's like a 90-degree turn, now he's on the circle. Now I need to give my horse cues for go. And how fast do we go? I don't have it very regimented, like on the lunge line. I typically don't have this is walk, this is trot, this is canter. How I do it is like we were talking about with transitions earlier, is when I kind of point and direct the horse where I want him to go. So if I want him to go off lickety split, I'm going to do it very military style, like go that way right now. If I want that horse to do it calmly and maybe walk out onto that circle, I take my time. I move my hands slowly. I give them time to do it. So they learn by my body language. If I'm more sharp, you need to be sharper. If I'm more fluid and calm, you can be calm. So now we've got our horse going around on the circle. Let's say this is a horse that it's like, oh, I cannot have this horse cantering on the circle, or, you know, I don't want him running off. Well, obviously, to control that, I need a cue that says, stop lunging now. Let's say I'm lunging my horse at a show or something, and someone loses control of their horse. I need to be able to quickly say to my horse, stop immediately and wait. So that's a whole thing. So how I get my horses to stop, think about them going on the circle. I want them to slow their front end down and move their hind end 90 degrees away so that by the time they do that, the horse is now facing me again. If they're facing me, it's very easy to control their movement. Sure, they could run backwards, but I can keep up with them really easily. Sure, they could run sideways, but as long as their eyes are on me, I can stay with them. I'm not going to lose hold of that lunge line. So that we're breaking this exercise down into create some distance, move your shoulder away, go forward at this speed, now stop. And then we start it all over again the other way. Once they're stopped and they're facing me, then I can switch hands and say, go that way. So with a horse that's just kind of used to going around on the lunge line, breaking this all down and making them wait is like this huge brain teaser for them. And a lot of times I'll work on all these things without ever getting them to hardly take a few more than a few strides on the lunge line, but that horse's mind gets worked. They're like, oh my God, I had to think so hard. And so when that happens, we tend to get calmness. So in instances where, you know, this horse shouldn't be run around on lots of little circles, or it's too muddy to do this, or maybe I need to ride this horse on an endurance ride today, so I can't waste all my horse on the lunge line. Doing it this way and being really thoughtful and methodical with it can help get their mind right. So I would say, you know, the most important factors you want to get is to be able to create distance between you and your horse and to be able to have a good stop button. So if your horse is too out of control, you can say, stop, think about it, and then ask them again calmly.
That's interesting, because this can feed back into the last question we did, where how you use your aids can influence your success rate, because you want to check and see, am I asking my horse to move on too loudly? And that might have to change a lot. If you have a horse that in that particular moment is feeling kind of low-key and blasé, your audio and physical aids might have to be a little bigger. But if you have your horse that's already kind of sharp and on edge, asking for those moving forward moments, you're going to have to be pretty darn subtle.
Yes.
And then wait. Okay, I asked you to move on. Well, you didn't. And again, because I have a tendency to be overly intense, I am prone to asking the horse to go forward a second time much too loudly. I crank the volume up from 4 to 9 right away. When what I should be doing is saying, go ahead and move on at a slow pace. And then I just turn it up one little tiny click and ask again. And I'm going to get more success if I ask 3 different times, turning the volume up a little bit, than asking twice and turning the volume up all at one time. Because then the horse is going to go, yippee, it's a game.
And with nervous horses, it's, and I fall victim to this, we tend to match their energy, and it's got to be the other way around. So I see a lot of people where the horse starts trotting too fast, so they pose faster, and then the horse trots faster, and then they pose faster. And again, it's that electric seat I'm talking about. And I'm like, no, 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 no. We'll go at my pace. I'm taking my dear sweet time to do this. And it's hard. We want to match them. No, I'm going to make you match me. And especially with this lunging, be strict about it. You don't, not saying kill them if they do it wrong, but do not progress until we're doing it the way I would like you to do it. I do this very calmly. You don't want to punish a scared horse because then it's just going to get worse. So I can't tell you how many clinics I've shown up to where, like, maybe I had to go take a bathroom break or something. I come back and the horse that I'm working with is kind of just going in a circle around them. I said, okay, what are you doing right now? And they're like, I guess I'm lunging. I'm like, did you want to lunge? Well, no, but she's nervous. I'm like, no, no, no. We don't lunge if we didn't want to lunge. And 9 times out of 10, other than if the horse is just full of beans, but most of the time it's a horse that's like, I don't know what to do. I don't know what to do. Well, a prey animal that doesn't know what to do tends to move their feet. And so you need to step in and say, hey, I have a thing for you to do. Let's not go around in a circle. Let's work on, why don't you put two eyes on me and keep your distance from me? And we're going to work on that. And a horse may only be able to hold that for 2 seconds before they're like, I have to run away again. So I stop them. I say, no, 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 no. Stop. Face me. When you face me, I'm going to, this is very important. I'm going to release pressure. I'm going to loosen that lead rope. And we're just going to stand here. I make my horses stand while I dink around on TikTok for 30 minutes because that's just how my brain works. We'll go when I say, and, you know, let's stand here for 5 minutes and then now we go. And so if you really are hit home with that, because again, this isn't about, I'm going to dominate this horse and he better do what I say, gosh dang it. It's about providing clarity. Most of the time, these horses that are really antsy with their feet just don't know what to do. They don't know what we're asking. Maybe we're not very clear. Maybe we're not being enough of a leader. So the horse is like, I guess I'm in charge. So, you know, I guess I'm just going to run around and scream for my buddies. It's like, no, pay attention to me. I have things for you to do. I give them something to do. And I do it, again, very impartially. I'm not angry when I do this. You cannot be angry with a nervous horse. You can't be fast with a nervous horse. I'm just like, hey, where are you going? Stop. Face me. Okay, that's what I wanted. Thank you.
There we go. And we're going to take another quick break from one of our important sponsors. And when we come back, we're going to hear from, who's next? Oh, I'm next. Woohoo! Yay!
You can enjoy your favorite equine videos all in one place with Ride TV, the ultimate equine streaming platform. The newly relaunched Ride TV has all the series you love, like Rockstar Vets and Mini Horses, plus top-tier training videos and event footage from BarrelRacing.com and Horse and Rider On Demand. Whether you're ready to relax with your favorite series, binge watch competition footage, or train with a world champion, subscribe to Ride TV today for only $19.99 to see where your ride takes you. Visit RideTVGo.tv to subscribe.
Okay, next we have your question, which is, how do you teach a horse to step its barrel toward you when doing groundwork? So I know someone asked a question on what this means. Can you give us a little clarity on what we're asking our horse to do?
Everybody loves the videos online when somebody stands up on a mounting block and the horse sashays sideways towards them and lines up at the mounting block.
Yeah, it's super cool.
Super cool. But one of the skills required is the horse has to move his barrel towards you, not his head, not the head. The barrel has to come towards you. I've been trying to teach Nigel to move his barrel towards me forever. I have not gotten a single step. Nigel just gets confused and then he gets amped up and it's a hot mess. So I need the absolute square one because this horse, if I move my pinky finger, will move away from me. He's super tuned in to move away from me. Forehand, hindquarters, move away. Fantastic. Towards me. And everything I've tried ends up with a frustrated Nigel. So I have obviously messed it up many times. So I really need to have the remedial course, please.
Okay. So not only is this exercise of getting the horse to step towards you super easy once you know how to do it, I would argue it's almost too easy, because once the horse, the light bulb goes off and the horse knows to move into the pressure I'm creating, they tend to go, "Oh, I like this." And then they'll just offer that all the time until you want your horse to move away and they're like, "Run you over sideways, got it," which can be terribly scary. So very, very easy to teach. I can get it taught in one session, but I would not do this with a horse that is still in a very green stage that maybe has issues with kicking or biting or being pushy. I would teach that horse to very much respect and move away from pressure first and get that going very well. I'd say your horse needs, I could teach this to any horse really quickly, but for safety, I think your horse needs some basic groundwork, basic body control, and to easily, like your horse, sounds like your horse is already doing, I should easily be able to get them to move away when asked, move those hindquarters away, move that rib cage away. Because like I said, if you do this and you're not very good on your cues, the horses, I've seen a lot of episodes where horses, you give them any pressure and they're like, "Run over you, got it, love it." So just get that in mind. And I say this from experience. And then I ended up in a kerfuffle with my horse where I'm like, "Please move your hip away." And he's like, "Slam my hip into you, got it." And then now I'm in this zone where I'm like, "Well, I feel like I have to tap you harder." So I give him a harder tap and he's like, "Oh, go faster into you, got it." So now if I were to whack that horse, which I would not suggest doing, he might go, "You know what? I have tried doing what I thought you wanted me to do. I'm just going to go ahead and kick you." So be careful. So again, get good hindquarters going away from you first. Now, there's a lot of different ways to teach this. Easiest one is I teach it on the rail. So you want your horse to be comfortable close to your fence or arena rail. If they're at all nervous about that, you need to, you know, first get them acclimated to standing close to the rail. I will have a whip or a training stick in my hand to do this, using it as an extension of my arm. I also want to make sure I can rub that horse all over his body with that whip and stick and he is not nervous. And I can do that on the fence. The fence is going to be very helpful here, but it can have a tendency to make a horse feel a little bit trapped. So we do this very slowly, methodically. If I feel my horse is nervous, I need to work on that before I advance. So get all that out of the way. So my cue for getting the horse to move its hip away is to tilt their nose toward me and I kind of lean forward and I'm like driving with my body language to get that horse to go away. To get the horse to bring himself toward me, I'm going to have kind of like a more upright posture and I'm beckoning to the horse to bring himself toward me. You want to establish that difference early on so he later does not confuse, you know, "Hey, does tapping me on the butt mean move it towards you or move it away?" So bringing the barrel or the hip towards you is you're drawing that horse towards you. Think of it that way. So if you want to put the super fancy cue on it, what I like to do is I hold my hand with the stick in it. So again, I'm standing at the horse's shoulder, horse is by the fence. I'll have the lead rope, my hand pretty close to the snap on the lead rope, just so I have more control, but I'm not a death grip on that horse. It's a soft hold. So I stand at the horse's shoulder. If I'm doing this on the horse's left side, the whip's going to be in my right hand. And I raise my hand straight up in the air and I just hold it there for a few moments. He is obviously not going to know what the heck that means. And that's okay. So I'm going to begin the process of lowering my hand and whip toward that horse's hindquarters. And as I do it, I'm going to kind of tap the air as I go down, if that makes sense. So I'm like kind of this vibrating, like, "Here comes the whip, here comes the whip." And it's just this very visual cue of I'm asking you to do something, because this is going to help us later. Once my hand is lowered to where I can tap that horse on the hip, I'm going to very lightly tap them on the hip. You do not want to be wailing on your horse with his butt up against the fence. It's just going to cause a ruckus. It's just now, a very light. Yes.
Visually, am I tapping his right hip or his left hip?
The hip closest to you. So it'll be his left hip.
The hip that's close to you. Okay.
Yes. Oh, yeah. Totally forgot. That's a good point. People try to get this done by tapping the opposite hip, which they get it done and it works really well. I tap the hip closest to me. That's just my personal preference. But I mean, and you could tap wherever you wanted, really. But I tap the hip that's closest to me. So if I'm standing on the horse's left side, I'm tapping his left hip. So if your horse already knows how to yield his hindquarters away, he's going to go, oh, I have to move my hip away. But guess what? There's a fence there. So he'll move it away and lightly probably brush into the fence. And you just keep very lightly asking, saying, that's a good try, but just keep going. At one point, he's going to kind of brush into the fence and then lean in a little bit. As soon as he does that, retreat, rub, rub, rub him all over with that whip, tell him he's a good boy, give him a cookie, whatever. If that made the horse at all nervous, I might go ahead and just like walk him off of the fence for a little bit. Like just let him know, man, I know that was really confusing for you, but you did it. You know, just let him breathe. You don't want to pressure the horse too much with this. So then I set him back up on the fence and I do the same thing all over again, hand in the air. And then I vibrate, you know, say, here comes the whip. It's getting lower and lower. Once I get towards the hip, I go tap, 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 tap. And they'll kind of rock back and forth a little bit. And then they'll lean in a little bit. And then I release. Usually it only takes once or twice of doing this before they get it. And they lean in and they'll actually take a step toward you. And so that's what you want. That's the button you want to start happening. What your horse may try to do instead, if you start tapping their hip, they realize, well, I can't move my hip away because the fence is there. So they might say, what if I just go forward? That's why you want your hand, your left hand close to the snap of the halter. And you gently stop them and say, no, 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 don't go forward. That's not the answer. So you've blocked the horse's right side and you've blocked the horse's front. Let's say they go, well, okay, maybe you want me to go backwards. If they go backwards, I'm not really going to pull on them and try and stop them from going backwards. I'm just going to stay glued to their shoulder and continually lightly asking. So the horse will go, well, that's not the right answer because when I go backwards, she's still asking. So when you see anything that looks or smells like leaning toward, that's when you release. And eventually the horse will go, oh, okay, I see what this is. So I do this over and over again until I can raise my hand in the air. And usually it doesn't take, I don't have to tap that horse very much until I raise my hand in the air and start kind of vibrating that whip and they come toward. So I just get one step at a time and I'll do one step. And then I like to rub their hip with that whip as a, remember how I talked about cueing in and cueing out of a behavior. So the cue into the behavior is my hand's raised up in the air. I need a cue now to say, okay, stop doing it. Cause I don't want my horse to swing all the way around and run me over. So if they take one step, which is all I'm after, I go back to rubbing their hip and that both kind of calms them like, oh man, you really responded well to this. And it tells them stop. I want to have good control with this because again, you're asking your horse to swing his body at you. So be careful.
Be careful.
Yeah. Be careful with this, guys. So I get to where I can get that horse to take one step, rub, one step, rub, one step, rub, until I can get that horse to bring his hindquarters off of the fence 90 degrees. Now his rib cage should be facing me. And so again,
in the early stages of this, or at all during the stages of this, should the horse be keeping his head straight ahead towards the fence, towards you? Does it matter?
Yes, I do not flex his head in any way for this. Oh. I just let him keep his head nice and straight. Again, I'm blocking his access to go forward because with my left hand, I'm using that to gently, if he tries to lean forward, I'll say, no, 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 we're not going forward. So he just needs to keep his head nice and straight. And then he, you know, I'm blocking his right side with the fence. So he really only has one option other than backing up, which is rare that they do that. If they're backing
or taking flight, they can take flight straight up in the air.
And if that happens, if that happens, that tells me we're not ready for this. Either I need to do more basic groundwork to get my horse in a better state, or, ooh, this horse gets really nervous when I get next to the fence. So then what I would do with that horse is not even work on it. We would do a lot of exercises next to the fence where I bring you to the fence and I pet on you and I love on you, make you feel really good. You don't want to make this a nervous exercise. So right. if at yeah. any
that's,
time
that's it, the struggle for us is he yeah. gets keyed up. He wants to get the right answer.
This should be calm and playful. And that's why it's very important. Like I could probably grab hold of him and get him to swing his butt around in one go, but we don't want that. We want him to think about it. So it's yeah, very
and he's
important
prone to that too. He's
yeah.
Once he gets something, he does tries. It as quickly as possible.
Yeah. Which is again, why I don't know if I've said this yet, but be careful when you do this exercise.
Yeah. And there's 1200 pounds of him. So, you know,
exactly. So just get him to bring that hip in one step. And again, as soon as he steps over, I rub him with that whip. And again, that's both a way to say, it's just the whip. Don't worry. You did great. But it's also a way to say, stop. So, yeah. Yeah. Rubbing the rip on the hip is my stop cue. Like so,
yeah.
yes. So now yeah. that I've got the horse 90 degrees off the fence, this is a good time for me to say, I want you to bring your hip back toward the fence. I want to make sure I don't lose the buttons to get his hips to go away. Oh. So I'll, yes. So you're like swinging a door open and closed. So when I've done this before and made mistakes, I had horses that could move their hindquarters away from me brilliantly. But then when I taught them this, then I lost that button for a second. And anytime I made any motion towards the horse's hip, they were like, throw my butt at you? Okay. So yeah. once they're 90 degrees yeah. off the fence, so their nose is facing the fence, their butt's to the center of the arena, I gently say, okay, now bring your hip back to the fence. So I'll work on this until I can easily say, bring your hip to the inside. Now bring it back to the fence. Bring it to the inside. Now back to the fence. And I'd encourage you to do this on both sides. It's
oh,
good
yeah.
to have
oh,
this.
Oh, gosh, yes. And it's just a yeah. skill because I can't ride him anymore. He's bored to tears, the poor thing. And yeah. I need to teach him some new skill sets because what we can do groundwork wise is reasonably limited. He loves
this is how I teach haunches yeah. in on yeah. like to do an in-hand haunches in as well.
Yeah. Yeah. And ground driving, he's fabulous. I can put him in all kinds of places when I'm ground driving him.
Perfect.
But I used the long lines and I thought, well, I can just teach him to turn his, bring his haunches towards me on the long lines.
You
lost
could.
His marbles.
Ooh.
From
Ooh.
His point of view, you never swing your butt towards a human being. End of sentence. So that's just him. So we need, so I think I need to clean my glasses so I can be more attentive to what he's telling me. So first step, I need to get him to the point where he can stand along the fence and let me rub all over him with a training stick. Because once he's next to the fence, I can see his energy levels start to key up and he starts to get tense. Even just standing
so
next to the fence.
So that would tell me, yeah, if I saw that, I'm like, we're not ready. Because
yeah,
we
so
have
I need to do that first.
Have,
okay.
Yeah. And I would do to where, you know, I could even like if you know, if I make any movement and he's bouncing off of that fence, I'm like, okay, let's just work on. So I'd spend a couple of days just whenever you're doing your groundwork, you know, work on something and hey, let's go to the fence and just have quiet time where I just pet you all over and love on you.
Yes. See, there yeah. we go. Why didn't that occur to me? Just make that the rest spot. Cause he has learned to enjoy TikTok time. That's one of your early lessons that really
always
for
rest
me.
The horse where they don't want to be. So if they're like, you know, you notice there's a corner in the arena, they're a little nervous and I don't force them to be where they're really terrified, but I'm like, let's go back. Let's take a break down at this arena, this end of the arena that you don't like as much.
Yeah.
So yes, break this down and keep it calm. This is very easy to teach. I can get it happening in seconds. That's not the problem. The problem is getting him mentally okay with it. So yeah. take all
That's
the time in
stuck.
The world. Yeah.
getting him mentally okay with it.
Yeah. Once I have it on the fence really well, I can bring your hip off the fence and then back toward the fence. Now I can do it off of the fence. And again, if I'm off of the fence, so I'm taking the training wheels off. If I want you to move away, I will kind of lean forward and walk toward your hip to say, go away from me. If I want him to bring his hip toward, I'll stand up more straight and I'm kind of like pulling his hip toward me. I might even take a step back. So it's a difference between drive and draw. So when you're asking this, think about that with your body language. Yeah. So he knows the difference between move away, now move toward. Yeah, once
I tend to lean forward too much. Okay. I've got writing that down.
Once you get it off the fence, you can start doing this with the mounting block. And, you know, same thing is I just add the mounting block into the mix. Maybe I'll stand next to the mounting block instead of on the mounting block to start and just get it to where when they line up perfectly with that mounting block, you make that the best place in the whole world. Remy is a pro. This is his favorite thing to do in the world. So much so now that when I get on him from the mounting block, he refuses to move forward because he gets a little thank you cookie every time.
He demands the cookie, doesn't he?
Yeah. But I bring a mounting block with me to shows. And when I'm in the stall aisle getting him ready, I just walk on the mounting block and he walks over and swings his hip around and he's like, let's go. They love doing this trick once they learn how to do it. They love it. And so, you know, it's again, I want to make sure when I get him lined up just how I want him to at that mounting block, I make that the biggest deal in the world. And on a nervous horse, once I get him to line up to the mounting block the first time, I'm not going to get on. I'm going to say, yeah, you did it, and rub on him and love on him and give him all the cookies. And then I'm going to walk him away from the mounting block and say, let's go away from that scary thing for a second. Not that they're scared of it, but, you know, I want him to feel just this immense relief and release of pressure when they do the thing right. And if you make that mounting block like this cherished place of safety and comfort, they end up loving the mounting block. It's their favorite thing in the world. I have a Liberty horse that I can't do Liberty with the mounting block in the arena because he's like, I know where I'm going. And I'm like, he's like, I love my mounting block, which is not a bad problem to have.
That's really funny. And here in Florida, all of the equine equestrian trailheads, and there are dozens and dozens and dozens of them, all have mounting blocks. When you think about it, the average age of the Floridian equestrian is not 25. So they have mounting blocks everywhere. And there's these giant concrete ones like you would put on the staircase into a mobile home. And when I first moved down here, Nigel was terrified of them. He didn't know what this giant chunk of concrete was. Aww. So we had to go through the process of it's a piece of concrete and it's okay. So yeah, that's interesting. So this gives me a lot to chew on, a lot. And there are some things I can apply eventually to baby James because, again, his groundwork really needs to be refined. He's got the basics really, really solid, but I need to get him past first grade because it's only the basics, and that's where it kind of he stopped. So great stuff.
Oh, and I forgot to bring the best part of why we do the hand in the air cue because – when we're on the trail, I'm not probably going to have a lunge whip with me.
No, good point.
So the cue becomes pretty cool. I raise my hand in the air and then I do the little matrix beckoning move and the horse will swing right over. So if you always make it a habit to put your hand up in the air before doing anything else, then you can start doing it without the whip to where I raise my hand up in the air and it's a pretty cool trick to impress all your friends.
Woohoo! I'm going to be so happy when I can stand Nigel next to the fence with my left hand on his halter and my right hand up in the air and extended by a short training stick and he doesn't bolt forward. I'm going to be so excited when that happens.
Yes.
that's our first goal is to be able to wave the whip up there and he doesn't go, oh my gosh, the answer is go forwards. Not necessarily the answer.
Yeah, this is a mental game with him as much as it is anything else.
Oh yeah, he wants. And to I want to say so we badly, did. But have, he only has one brain cell.
Poor baby. And he doesn't get to use it every day.
He does not get to use it every day. And for the past 6 weeks, he's not gotten to use it at all because I'm not riding him. I'm riding James, and he's been kind of ignored. And I'm feeling a little guilty.
Oh, so there were some other questions that kind of fell into this category. So we had some people ask, like, what do I do if the weather's too bad? And this is a great exercise to work on that because it's just,
great.
Yeah.
Awesome. Great stuff. Well, we have plumb run out of time. Auditors, pay attention because we're going to have a post show today. Woohoo! And for folks who want to get a hold of you to go to do a clinic in their area. You've got one coming up in Oregon real soon, but that one's already sold out. If they want you to do a clinic for them, if they have a horse that needs training, if they need to get some artwork because there's less artwork in their life than they need, how do they do that?
You can find me on Facebook at Mary Kitts Miller Horsemanship.
Showtime. Well, post showtime. Before we got started today, Mary and I got to chit-chatting about dogs because, hello, there's lots of dogs in Mary's life, and I love dogs. And auditors, I'm sure, have been keeping up with how your Malinois Echo is doing. So for auditors who are not on the Facebook page, how is Echo doing?
For the most part, she's doing great. So, you know, she's still happy and you know, full of zest and energy, which is typical Malinois behavior, very high energy dogs. I found out last November that she has some congenital kidney issues and she does not have a very good prognosis. So we've been treating that for the last few months. And again, other than she's a little skinnier than normal, you wouldn't know she was ill. So I've had to switch her dog food to low phosphorus, low protein dog food. I'm giving her subcutaneous fluids several times a week. She's on all sorts of medications, but she's still doing good.
She has you posted a picture of her on the Facebook page and she still has that intense look on her face, like the so classically Malinois. So you did a lot of training with her, which I guess is really great for Malinois because they're pretty intense dogs, are they not?
Yeah. So I guess the training I did with her is what the training that you ought to do with every dog you get, but my other dogs are Chihuahuas. So it's like, eh. And I kind of just fell into getting her. And as soon as I was researching the breed, there's a lot of stuff out there that's like, don't get them. They'll destroy your house. And they're the most high energy dogs on the planet. And because I mean, these dogs are, you know, the modern Malinois are jumping out of helicopters and going after terrorists. They're pretty intense dogs. They use them in police work and military work. So they're really intense dogs. So I was almost like, oh my gosh, what am I getting myself into? So sort of really scared myself into, okay, I better do this right. So in areas where I wasn't, because I'm not a dog trainer, in areas where I wasn't exactly sure what to do, I invested in some online training programs. One that I love for every dog is Susan Garrett's Crate Games. I think every dog should be crate trained for their own safety and well-being, especially like with Echo. She had to go into the 24-hour vet hospital for about a week, and that involved being in a crate most of the day. And if she had not been properly crate trained, that would have been disastrous.
I never thought of that, but you're right. If you have to take your dog into the doggy hospital, they're going to be in a doggy hospital crate.
Or what if you're in an area that is prone to hurricanes or wildfires and your dog needs to be transported and they need to be able to stay in a crate as they're being taken to safety, you know?
A little bit important. Like teaching your horse to go on a horse trailer. Same thing.
Yeah. So I did that with her. I was very thorough on her crate training, and that not only helped her potty training go perfectly, but for the first maybe 8 months of her life, I'd be working in my house with her. And if I had to go outside to check the mail and I didn't want to bring her with me, she went into a crate, you know, no ifs, ands, or buts. If she was unattended, she was in her crate. And using that crate games thing is a way to make crates really fun. And you're putting a cue and telling them to go in their crate, and you're using lots of cookies. Because again, you put a high energy nervous dog in a crate without any other training, they might eat that crate. And there's a lot of stories of Malinois doing that. But Echo loves her crate because I made it fun, happy place. So I worked really hard on that. I took her to a local obedience class just to both socialize her and just to get some basic things done. And, you know, taught her all the basics, sit, stay, down, stand, back up. And then I think the most important thing to teach a dog like a Malinois or say a heeler, any kind of working dog that has a propensity to use their little teeth, is I taught her how to drop it and leave it. And I learned that early on because I was using a lunge whip as like a flirt pole with her. So I would wave the lunge whip.
Explain what a flirt pole is. These are awesome.
Yes. So it's something with, you know, that you can use to get your dogs, get their energy out and play without having to go on like a 6 mile walk or something. And so I use my lunge whip. So the lash of the lunge whip, I'd wave around and she'd chase it as a puppy and she loved it. And I noticed really quick, even when she was a very small young puppy, that, oh my gosh, this dog is like trying to juggle knives, because I was waving the whip and she ran from far away and jumped through the air to grab the whip. And as she did it, she grabbed my hand as she flew by. And I stood there for a second without looking at my hand, thinking, oh my God, I still hope I have all my fingers. And I was fine. It was fine, just a scratch. But it made me realize, gosh, she's just a little puppy. And she can be that crazy with her teeth. So the next thing I taught her, this is like with the horse with the lunge line, I needed to teach all these things so that we could make playtime safe and fun for both of us. So immediately I was like, okay, I'm going to teach you to drop something when I say, I'm going to teach you to wait until I give you the cue to play and grab the thing. I don't want to just like grab something and her decide it's a toy and run at me with all her teeth ablazing. So
that's a little bit akin, I think, to teaching a horse when you walk into their stall or their area and you need to pour their grain into a bucket.
Yes.
Teach the horse that you need to be respectful and be still while I do this so I don't get mugged. Same
exactly.
Skill set.
Yeah. Yeah. So I was really vigilant on that. And I taught her how to go to a place. So she, whether it was a dog bed or some sort of mark, I when I said place, she would go there. And that's really helpful. She got really full of energy. Again, they call them maligators because the teeth on these things are insane. And when she gets really excited, she chatters. So when I get that lunge whip out, that's like her eyes just, they go fully black and she starts chattering with her teeth. She's like, snap, 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 snap. And I'm like, oh my gosh, she looks like a piranha. So it was really important for me to be able to say, you need to go over there and wait until I tell you, you can play with it. And then once you're playing with it, once you're trying to pull my arm out of its socket, I should be able to say, stop. And she's brilliant at it. So she knows how to drop it and leave it and wait and go away if I need her to. Like with horses, it's important to be able to have distance. So I've done a lot of that stuff with her and then just playing around. And with the Malinois, it's kind of like having a hot horse. Yes, working the snot out of them will get them tired and expend their energy, but then they get fit. And so now our 6 mile walks have turned into 15 mile walks, and it's already an animal that's high strung and meant to go, go, go. So while long walks are very important and helpful, the things that I did with her involved lots of brain activity, and that's
mental
what would
simulation.
Get her.
Yeah.
Yeah. Calm and tired. We played a lot of like games where I would hide her toys around the house and have her find it. And so lots of that stuff. She's been a lot of fun.
That's very interesting because, again, that circles back to so many of the questions that we've had today that teach learning how to get the horse's mental game on your side so you mentally work them in addition to the physical part is so key to the overall relationship between the horse and the human. Because
so much of it is mental.
The lackadaisical, dull horse can be spurred into action. And I'm using spurred in the, not in the spur on your foot sense. They can be encouraged and brought into a more energetic state by mentally cueing them in and getting them mentally stimulated. And the high energy horse the opposite can happen. You can get them working mentally, so they become focused and calm because they're confident in being challenged mentally, and they're confident that they're going to get the right answer mentally. Because so many horses, I think, that are high energy mentally are thinkers, and they want to know what the question is so that they can get the answer and feel calm. Tell me what the question is so I can answer it, please.
Yeah. And that's a double-edged sword of having a real sporty horse. I mean, I want the horse that can go lickety split with very little cue and, you know, really stop that cow or hit that jump. But those horses, their brain is going a million miles an hour, and they're, you know, if they're bred to do it, they're very fit and they're very capable. They're like, I could do this all day. It's like I had a Morgan horse that I used to try to lunge her till she was tired. And it's like, Morgans don't know what that means. Morgans were bred to work in the field all day and then go win races at night. So
tired is not in the vocabulary, is it?
Yeah. And, you know, getting a good hard workout in is very good for conditioning, and it is good to get them tired. But so much of groundwork is mental. And now I love groundwork, and I could do groundwork for hours every day, but typically for a riding horse, I would say your goal of groundwork is not to have to do groundwork. So if you're having to like lunge them for 30 minutes every day, and that becomes like the necessity, pain in the butt. Yeah. So I'm doing all my groundwork with the mindset of, when can I stop doing groundwork?
There we go. Perfect. Lots of fun. I'm glad we got to do a post show. We don't always have time to do a post show because Mary's a horse trainer. And of course, she's always training horses. But thanks for hanging out with me for a little extra. And we'll be back again tomorrow with more Horses in the Morning.
All right. See ya.